Welcome back. We are into hour number two. It feels so great. Of course, it would feel great. I was off 2 weeks, but I feel awesome. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Clones, telephone number is toll-free. You know this. 1-800-636-8686. You can hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at Habitate.com. Busy second hour, but we started off with a good friend of the program. He is a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the host of the Yogi Roth Show podcast. And he does hold the honor and distinction of being the first in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network and the only man who gets his own custom greeting on this program. Yogi Roth is my guest. He is in studio. Brother, what's up? How you doing?
Oh, so good. Best summer. Football season's here. I mean, going to training camps and get to hang with you at post-vacation. I mean, this is as good as it gets.
Oh, man, I'm laughing because you are always awesome. It's always good, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I know college football is right around the corner, and that when I sit down with you, we're going to have this kind of energy, but we're at August 12th. We're 12 days right now from Miami taking on Florida in Orlando. Arizona's going to go up against Hawaii right here on CBS Sports Network. Knowing that we're this close, Yogi, you know where I'm going with this. My one question, how great is ball?
It's the best. You know, you think about, like, our job is, I think, to seek and uncover humanity in sports, and specifically right around now, at least for me, college football. You do everything. And you dive into, I was just in Tucson talking to Khalil Tate. You referenced the game that's on your network. Coach Rolovich out at Hawaii and what he's doing with that program with the old school run and shoot, Mouse Davis. I mean, when you really peel back the layers of who's going to the CFP, which is BS right now, and it arguably could be BS however you want to look at it as the thing goes on, there's humans, you know? And I think now, at least kids, and I was just talking to a couple of programs in the Pac-12 about branding, and everybody's about their brand, and I think we forget even as fans in football that the helmet comes off, and there's humans and there's stories there and kids that love the craft. And training camp is when you really get to talk to them about that because everybody's undefeated and in a pretty good mood.
All right, so the helmets come off and we talk about what's inside of guys. You and I were talking during the break, but I want to jump to it right now. You're big right now on EQ. EQ. What is so interesting to you about EQ? What is it and what interests you about it?
Yeah, so emotional intelligence. You know, I mean, I think we've always spent time as athletes growing up, you know, with your family, you know, you yourself, me, myself. It was all about like straining. You know, can you wake up earlier? Can you stay later? Coach says 3 sets of 10. You do 3 sets of 12. Like, you run not 40-yard sprints, but 60-yard sprints. Like, we always do more physically. And we all admit and accept that the mind and the brain and our mindset and our psyche play such a big role in performance. But we don't train it, right? We don't pay for a gym membership to train our mind. Very rarely. So this year, myself and our staff, Trent Dilfer and company at the Elite 11, we leaned into emotional intelligence for a huge reason. One is I think the emotions that college athletes go through now are dramatic. They come in as huge recruits. They very rarely live up to that hype when it is dramatically large. And they come out relatively depressed. They either aren't a big draft pick, aren't drafted at all, and clearly didn't live up to huge expectations. So we said, let's talk about it. Fundamentally, EQ, emotional intelligence, is the capacity to deal with your emotions and to be able to communicate with people with those emotions. And when you talk to guys about it, you got to be able to self-regulate, self-assess, be empathetic, all things that I think it's really hard for athletes now because it's all about what can I project? What can I put in my IG? What's going to get me double taps, likes, RTs, etc.? And you forget that you're human. And then all of a sudden, you're in a really dark place. So we did it. We tried it with the Elite 11 kids this summer, and all we taught them was emotional intelligence. And it was awesome. They finally had fun. They tapped in their imagination. I call it the wonder switch. We turned that back on for a lot of them, and they started to embrace the joy around the craft. And I think that's what EQ does when you can be aware of what's going on in your own brain and how to communicate it with others.
Yogi Roth is joining me in studio. All right, so as part of this summer also, you went through something life-changing, which I'm going to get to in a little while, but you did have a stop in Utah. They're the preseason favorite to win the Pac-12. What did you make of what you saw in Utah?
Yeah, I was there in the spring, called their spring game on the Pac-12 networks. And, you know, spring is cool because you're there for real practice. And I was like, whoa, I haven't seen a team practice like this in a long time. Last time I saw a team practice like this, I was on the staff, the Trojans, back in the day. I was like, okay, that was spring. Let me get there and camp. Came to a real practice and training camp. Same exact thing. Because usually in the season, you see a Friday walkthrough. It's not much, right? They are as real of a team as I've seen in a really long time. And I comp them.
What do you mean by that?
They look the part to Alabama size-wise. They looked the part to Clemson speed-wise. They looked the part to Ohio State when you look at the secondary-wise. I mean, everyone across the board on defense reminds me of SC back in 05, where everyone who started at some point made it to the league. Some were undrafted free agents. Some were first-round picks. When I look at this defense, Bradley and I, Leckie Fotu on the defensive front, they're real dudes that came back for their senior year. Jalen Johnson, to me, he's top one or two cornerback on the West Coast. He's going to be one of the best in the country. Safety, Julian Blackman, reminds me of Earl Thomas. Linebackers, they've got dudes that may be unrestricted free agents, maybe fourth, fifth round picks. Devin Lloyd may be a high-profile guy because he's only in his second year in the program. Point being, they all look the part. Now, they don't have the depth that those other programs have, but they are real, and they're physical, and that's their mindset. And oh, by the way, they return one of the top running backs in the country. Their offensive line, to me, had their way at times with that defensive front in practice, which is really impressive. Quarterback's a four-year starter, then good enough at wide receiver, eight deep. So they've got the tools and a head coach, longest tenured guy on the West Coast in Kyle Whittingham, to make a real run at this thing in terms of the college football playoff and impressing that 13-member committee.
All right, so this is the reason why they're the team to beat in the Pac-12. Now, when you look at things locally, Yogi, let's shift to that for a minute. To the dismay of some Trojan fans, Clay Helton is back. What is the biggest key for USC coming into this season?
Yeah, I think there's really two things. And I was just there 2 days ago. I'm going to go back again tomorrow. Can't wait to get around that team. It's not ability. You know, I think when we look at the players, they have them. Now, I think there's a myth out there that's they've got the best players in the pack or the best players in the country. I think when you go position group by position group, that's not true. They got the best receiving core, but I would take Justin Herbert and KJ Costello right now over their quarterback room. I think that's fair when you go around different groups. They need to develop a corner, but the biggest things are, one, resiliency. When they were on the road last year and got down, they never came back one time. So when things get bad, can you bounce back? I call it pace, plays after critical errors. Do you have that quality? Second thing, which is going to sound silly, it's excitement. And that's what Graham Harrell and the six new assistants brought to this staff. They had to remind guys, hey, bro, you're at USC. Like, let me tell you what everybody around the country thinks about when they see the interlock, USC, and what the Trojans are about. You saw that in spring. I saw it in practice. And I think in college football, energy can really garner a couple wins. I think it's that important, that critical, especially around the EQ that we reference of that age group. And I think you're seeing guys in that program, and I think they'll have the most fun they've ever had playing, because they were those high-profile recruits that it went from a joy when they were 10, 12, 14 years old to a craft and a job 16, 17, 18 offered all these scholars. And I think, to me, it sounds crazy, but they'll be the sleeper in the Pac-12, and they'll take a real run at the South in my eyes.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. All right, what about Crosstown? What is a reasonable expectation for UCLA in year number two under Chip Kelly?
Yeah, I was just there yesterday with the program, and they remind me of Utah a couple years ago. They don't have anybody right now that I look and say, first-round draft pick. And I don't know if anybody there would say that. Darnay Holmes potentially a corner. He's a real dude. But they have a lot of players that you look as a really good football player. You know, they started 19 true freshmen last year. They have 87 freshmen and sophomores, 41 true freshmen on the roster right now, today. And they're a really young team, but they're really solid across the board. Dorian Thompson-Robinson's going to come back as their quarterback. They got depth at receiver. They got one of the top 10 rushers statistically in the country, and Joshua Kelly coming back, let alone one of the best stories in recent years, coming from UC Davis, walking on, getting a scholarship, being a top 10 rusher in the country, almost three Bills against the Trojans a year ago in the upset win. And then on the defensive side, they're really solid. You got three true freshmen that played D-tackle last year. They're sophomores now. You know, Tyler Manoa, Antonio Maffi went from 411 pounds to 351. I mean, think about that in terms of his movement. So I call it circle games. When I look at every one of their games, other than potentially Oklahoma, it's a circle game. Maybe Utah. They can win. It could go either way. So it'll all be about, for them, unforced errors, not doing things that hurt themselves, and staying in games and allowing Chip Kelly's prowess as a play caller to just set in when they need to. And I just kind of believe in that. So I think they're a bowl team this year.
You're covering so much ground. Yogi Roth is joining me in studio. Now, you mentioned Justin Herbert coming back at quarterback with Oregon, Mario Cristobal coming in. Once again, they're coming off a 9-win season. That was his first year as head coach there. They're going to open up against Auburn in Arlington, Texas. How important is that game, not just for the Ducks, but for the Pac-12 as a conference?
It's huge. I mean, I don't think it's as big as UW Auburn a year ago. And I hope that people that have a voice, like the people on the committee, or, you know, I know you don't do this, but other people that have platforms, you don't bury a whole conference based on one game, especially when it was competitive like it was a year ago. But I think for them, what they have is they've got the sexiness of Justin Herbert. He's everything. He is as impressive as a guy as I've been around. He has what I call the Marcus impact in terms of he's not about himself, not about his brand. He's about his team. And that makes him and his brand even hotter, right? And, oh, by the way.
Funny how that works,
he's a
right?
dude, right? Exactly. You don't ask for it and it always comes. So I love everything about him. But I also love their offensive line. 153 combined starts returned. Penei Sewell, listeners, remember the name. He'll be a top 10 draft pick at left tackle. Two running backs that are on the Doak Walker preseason award list. Real dudes. Five true freshmen come in at wide receiver that elevate the program immediately. They had 52 drops a year ago. So everybody wants to take shots at Herbert and his completion percentage. 52 drops. Dramatic amount. And then they bring in Juwan Johnson, a transfer from Penn State at wide receiver. And defensively, which is the sneaky part of this team, Andy Avalos comes from Boise State, new defensive coordinator. And Auburn's going to play a first-year quarterback. Might be Bo Nix, true freshman, Joey Gatewood, redshirt freshman. Stage is big for them, too. And I think a lot of times on the West Coast, you hear, like, SC's got a tough stretch. Oregon's got Auburn. Well, they got to play them, too. You know, there's two sides of that. So I don't know if they'll win. I think it'll be a really competitive game. But I love the physicality. I love what Mario Cristobal brings to the game. And I love their campaign in terms of Herbert once a month has a huge stage. I think he's got the best opportunity to win the Heisman for a West Coast kid in a long time because of that.
We're talking to Yogi Roth. Now, you and I talked about EQ. Let me ask you about CTC. All right, that's one of the things that comes up at the Elite 11 quite a bit. CTC, control the controllables. It seems kind of self-evident, but what does that mean? And how important is that when you evaluate a quarterback?
Well, I think it's everything, you know, and I'll never forget it. So we had a quarterback, and I'll tell a story about him. His name's Bryce Young. He's going to USC. He's here in Southern California. He's gifted. He'll remind you, I was comparing him to like Steph Curry at point guard, you know, if he was playing, when he plays the quarterback position. One of the top guys in the country. He was my pre-Elite 11 number one guy. And the way we did it this year with EQ at the Elite 11, you'll see it on the NFL Network the next couple weeks, the doc series will release, is we had guys vote for themselves or vote on each other. So usually the staff comes back and says, who's 1 through 11? We said, this year, let's flip it. Let's teach these guys the tools, the emotional intelligence, give them the tools to make real peer reviews. We even brought in the Navy SEALs to teach them how to peer review each other and just be truth tellers. Guys are great at it. And within his peer group, he also had quarterback commit in Notre Dame, Drew Pine, and also had C.J. Stroud, who ends up winning the MVP. C.J. just had one of those weeks. So Bryce, for the number one guy, going to SC, everybody had huge expectations. It's hard, right, when you're supposed to be the dude. But he thrived in our setting. Thrived because we taught him around controlling the controllables, etc. Well, the minute the rankings come out, and the minute the players vote on who the top guys are, and he opens up his phone, it's a challenge. Because what's coming at you? All the negative juice, all the negative energy, all the naysayers. What's going on? Did you get screwed? Whatever it is.
What does EQ say about that? Does it say, don't look at that? Does it say, look at it, take it all in, and this is how you react to it? What do you do with that?
It says, assess it, regulate it, and have the capacity to deal with it. And that's exactly what he did. And I can remember our final meeting, we said to the guys around CTC and control the controllables, Trent said it, it's a great quote that I'm going to steal. He said, don't be a prisoner of the moment, but be a product of the process. And we saw it with this young man, in Bryce Young. It was just that light bulb of like, whoa, yeah, because that's going to happen to me in college. Don't be a prisoner of the moment when I throw a bad pick or when I'm pissed if I'm benched, if I'm Tate Martell today and not named the starter at Miami that just happened a few minutes ago. Don't be a prisoner of the moment. Be a product of your entire process because you're 18, and that's not a long life, but it's not 5 minutes when a decision was made. And to watch that happen with that type of kid who is a brilliant young man, I was like, yeah, man. This CTC thing is real, and I can't wait for these guys to just get – we just expose them a little bit to it, but then it's on their programs to really make that thing flourish, and I think most college programs try to do that.
Yogi Roth is joining me. I've got something I have to ask you. I have to ask you. How great is Bali? How great is Bali? Over the summer, you and Amy got married in Bali. To borrow that phrase, how great is Bali? Tell me about that, man. How great was Bali?
It was magic. You know, you travel, you got back from a trip, as you referenced, in Croatia, traveling around with your family. And for us to go to the spiritual capital of the world, you know, it's known as the healthiest, the place for just pure healing. You know, Indonesia has 17,000 islands. Bali is one of 17,000, and it's the only Hindu island. So whether it was Hindu or Christian or Jewish, like it's one of 17,000. It's already unique in and of itself. And have our family there, our little guy Zane with us. Like, it was so special to experience the moment when we all said, I do. Everybody got a ring, you know, her, myself, little man. But we also got to celebrate other people's wedding engagements, other people's birthdays, other people's anniversaries. It was really you know, about our community. And that's what Bali is. You know, they truly, and in the Hindu culture and the Hindu religion, they believe in karma. And I believe in karma. And everything about that place is about that. You know, they put out a little thing every day. You'll love it. My mom fell in love with it. It's an offering. And it's a little banana leaf. And they put a flower in it. They put incense in it and a piece of food. It could be a cracker if that's all you have. It could be a piece of chicken. It could be a fruit. And they put it out 3 times a day on the doorstep. And it's just an offering out to the universe. Like, hey, I want to give you something. You know, I may not have a lot. I might just have a cracker. I might just have a morsel. I might just have a crumb. But I believe that if I give it away, it all comes back. And everyone I've been around, you, Coach Carroll, any of my mentors, they've all been about give it, give everything away. And I think when I get asked by kids, give me a key to life, it's give it all away. And Bali was another reminder of that. And to marry the love of my life there and to celebrate it with the hashtag, how great is Bali? It didn't get much better.
That is so good. Now, you and Amy, how did the two of you meet? Is there a college football angle in this somehow?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we didn't throw flowers at our wedding. She actually threw a football. We met because
she threw a pretty good ball?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's an athlete. She can rip. She's better than a lot of 13 quarterbacks that I've seen around the country.
Great.
But yeah, I was at San Jose State and Stanford. And Mike Bloomgren, he's now the head coach at Rice, and Brent Brennan's head coach at San Jose State. They're like, hey, stick around an extra day. So I end up just changing my travel schedule and stick around the campuses. I'm hanging out, talking ball. And I go to the airport and just kind of living my life. It's spring football. It's March 23rd, exactly, a couple years ago. And I walk on, and you know how it is. You walk down the aisle at a plane and you kind of assess where you're sitting. And I see this smile pop up and I'm like, I'm within one or two seats of that, or one or two rows.
I hope I am.
Yeah, I hope I am. And it happened to me exactly that. And I sat there and my jaw was kind of on the floor because I was like, oh yeah, like it's on. And I sat in the middle seat. She had her headset in reading Fast Company. I'll never forget it.
Huh.
And I tapped her on the shoulder. I was like, how you doing? She pulled out one ear bed. She's like, good. Put it right back in. Tapped her again. I was like, you heading home? She goes, yeah, put it back in. Guy next to me is clowning me, laughing. And I was like, bro, I'm boxing you out.
That's a big swing, by the way,
totally,
man.
And I was like, I got to go again.
Headphones in. I mean, dude, that's a pretty obvious message, right?
Yeah, clearly. And I was like, I got to go again.
Not interested, bro.
Yeah. And I went with my only ace in the hole. And I got to thank my parents is my name. So I was like, hey, my name's Yogi. What's yours? And she's like, Yogi? Both earbuds came out. And she's like, how'd you get that name? And then
wow. She
didn't breathe for 45 minutes. Took me a few months to get a date, but greatest thing clearly that ever happened to me in my life.
Yeah, dude, what if your name was like, I don't know, Adam?
Yeah, she would have been like, cool, I'm Amy, later.
Incredible. We're talking to Yogi Roth. I've got a couple of more moments with him. That's such a good story. It's really good. As I mentioned, Arizona's going to open up against Hawaii. It's going to sound like a shill because that's what it is, but I love the matchup. Arizona against Hawaii, CBS Sports Network. I love the programs. I love the coaches. What do you expect to see from the Wildcats in year number 2 under Kevin Sumlin?
It'd be a totally different team. I fundamentally and firmly believe, and I bet you would say this with all the programs, TV shows, radio shows you've done, it takes about 18 months to establish culture. And that's where they are. Remember, he came in post-signing day in the first year of the early signing period. So his first class wasn't even his guys. So to build the trust, but even more importantly, just get to know guys. In recruiting, you're doing these home visits. Like, you get to know personalities. Off-season workouts, you get to know guys. It took him a year to do it. Khalil clearly got injured. There was issues there with their offense. What should they be? What shouldn't they be? They lost some dramatic games, like a Houston game midday, hot as all get out in Houston on the road. And now they put it behind them. And I really believe this for him. Remember, he was competing with Caleb Wilson, who Mr. Irrelevant for the starting quarterback job in high school. He was never a dude until heading into last year when he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So we had to deal with that. Talk about capacity, emotional intelligence. He had to deal with all that. And now, I was just there a couple days ago, he's primed. He is primed. This defense is veteran-laden. You know, they got Colin Schooler back. He was a freshman defensive player of the year at linebacker. They got two defensive linemen that I think are big-time all Pac-12 caliber players. Receivers, they're young. Depth at running back and J.J. Taylor, one of the other four top 10 rushers who return in the Pac-12 conference this year in the country statistically. So they'll move the ball, and I think he scares defensive coordinators more than Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, because he's accurate, and he's a freaky tailback when the ball's in his hands. So I'd expect him to tuck it and run it probably a little bit more than he did a year ago, and I think we're going to have a great game in Hawaii. And the conference needs that game almost as much as you could argue Auburn, because everybody's watching, because we're all starving for college football.
Agreed. Last thought. I'm already running heavy, but you talk about this type of thing on your podcast. If it takes 18 months to change the culture of a program or an organization, if you want to reinvent yourself, the individual, and you want to change your personal culture or your ethos, how long should that take?
I call it the lonely work. You know, it's however long you really want to get real. You know, if you can only do an hour a day, maybe it's going to take you a couple months, but I've always felt that the number one job of all of us is just to get to the truth. And there's a big difference between disagreement and dislike. So when you're around mentors, around your tribe, like, what's my truth? And you could look in the mirror and be like, well, what am I wearing? You know, everybody has a philosophy they live by every day. But sometimes, you know, old Lou Tice, if you remember that guy, he was a motivational guy back in the day. He was Coach Carroll's guy. He used to say you can develop a scotoma. And a scotoma would be if I walked in here and there was papers everywhere, the first couple of days, maybe it's awkward. But if I don't touch them, then I just get used to the place being a mess. And then my life becomes a mess and it starts to reflect all over me. So I think that's the biggest thing. If you want to change, you got to ask yourself hard questions. What's my style, my vision, the theme, my philosophy of my life, and go to work on it. And then just keep diving in and leaning in. And I think that's the most fun that you could possibly have. I mean, we could work on each other all day, but to sharpen our own sword and to live on our own razor's edge, that's where the best performers operate, in my opinion, because then you're not performing with fear. You know, you've interviewed a lot of guys, and I'm always skeptical when I hear I was driven by the fear of failure. Okay. I was that way too. It takes up a lot of brain space. You know, I'm driven by how long can I stay in the razor's edge? How can I continue to compete to be my best self? And then you're like, all right, let's cut it loose, bro. Let's roll. And you're not worried about, I just screwed up the last sentence. I mispronounced the last name. You know, Colin, you do live shows. I do live games every Saturday with Ted Robinson on the Pac-12. You can't.
No net, man, but you got
to
go.
Yeah, you got to. It's a process, though, to get yourself there. And I'm always working at it. You always are. And that's the joy.
Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker, a New York Times bestselling author, very good friend of the program, and the host of the Yogi Roth Show podcast. My man, you crushed that. So good to see you.
I love hanging
with you.
Appreciate
it. So fun. It's the best. Good job, Yogi. Thank you. All right, we'll take a short time out. It's going to be a short time out, then a short segment because we ran long, but that was worth it. Yogi Roth, you want to find him, hit him up on social. If you've got thoughts, you can hit me up too at Jim Rome. Short timeout. We're coming right back. Coming up later on at 40 past, Tim Corbin, one of the best in the business, head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. I said, if you're ever in Southern California, you've got to come by the studio. Well, he is, and he will. All of that straight ahead.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Yogi Roth, if you need him. Man, my brother is so good. He is so, so good on so many different things. So good to connect with him, get caught up. Because we went as long as we did, just so you know, this is going to be a short segment. Do not be alarmed. It's going to be a short segment. It's going to be a good segment, but it's going to be a short segment. Keep that in mind. All right, that segment's over. Hope you enjoyed that. I thought I was awesome. Yeah, like I said, they don't just let anybody in the Hall of Fame. Only people who can host four-second segments like that. All right, my thanks to Yogi Roth. We had former NFL James Jones back in hour number one. As mentioned, we're joined right now by a guy, well, we'll be joined, by somebody who has built an absolute monster at Vanderbilt. The head baseball coach there, Tim Corbin, will be joining me in studio. Still ahead. I'll tell you about my European vacation. I was off for 2 weeks. That's coming up a little bit later on. And, you know, I kind of wrestled with it. But you clones have been so amazing by trying to get me inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. And finally, that vote came through and it worked in my favor. I'm really excited about that. We did it, clones. So I'll share some thoughts with that coming up in hour number three. I never did finish my thoughts on America's team, the Cleveland Browns. Exhibition football means nothing unless America's team shows up the way they did and dominates, which they did. So all of that's still ahead, starting with Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin. That's coming up momentarily. But first, here is a bottom-of-the-hour sports update for you. I mentioned that hour number two is going to be a big hour. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome, back for the first time after 2 weeks. Had a great vacation, but back in the saddle, and it feels great. As promised, we are joined right now by another guest in studio. He is the head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. He led Vanderbilt to a second College World Series title this season. He is a two-time National Coach of the Year. He is a three-time SEC Coach of the Year. He was selected for induction into the American Baseball Coaches Association Hall of Fame class of 2020. Vanderbilt won the SEC regular season title and the tournament title, and they set the league record for wins and tied the record for draft picks. What I'm saying is they had an amazing year, 59-12. And I said, if you are ever in Southern California, Tim Corbin, you've got to come in studio. And he did just that. Tim, it is so good to see you in person. How are you?
Great. Great studio. I love this.
Not too bad, right?
No, it's nice. The pictures, you can take those pictures down of me, though. That's tough to watch. It's tough to see.
Come on, man. They got to look at me all day for 3 hours.
Yeah.
This is good. You're upgrading my real estate. All right. So you and I spoke shortly after you won the national title in June. What has life been like since that win, and what have you been up to?
Pretty busy, actually. I mean, don't really have too much time to decompress this time of year because it's recruiting time. And we got into camp a couple weeks right after we played, a couple days. And then after that, I mentioned went up to Cape Cod and saw our kids play up in the Cape Cod League. And then past couple of weeks, been recruiting. Been down here or across here in Orange County area, Long Beach, watching the area code games. And that's always been a lot of fun. Done that for 25 years. So it's good to kind of recapture this area and get back here and see some of the kids we signed.
All right, so what are you looking for down here? What are the area code games all about?
Area code games are made up of teams from all different area codes around the country. So you have Midwest kids, you have West Coast kids, East Coast kids, and they split them up. And the major league organizations put a uniform on them, whether it's Yankees or Brewers or Rangers and Nationals, and just a lot of teams that play against one another, and they play about 4 or 5 games a day for about 10-12 days. So that's what we've been watching.
Yeah, it's really interesting because my kids both played club ball out here, and I've got one son going to Wisconsin this fall. My younger son starts high school. He's still playing club ball and high school baseball. Tim, it's amazing to me how different baseball is even from here to 10 miles down the road, and how different it is and the way they approach it. What's your general take on Southern California baseball? What are the kids like out here and the way they play?
Well, they're very good. I mean, they play a lot, so they're more savvy to the game. Weather's excellent. A little bit different than the Northeast kids. But I think that's what makes these games unique, is because you get a lot of Northeast kids mixed in with the Orange County kids and kids from all over. So you kind of see the style of play. But I would say, more than anything, the kids from California are groomed in the game and pretty savvy and have a different feel about how to play the game.
Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin is joining me in studio. Now, in terms of your team, there's this great story about the moment when you knew this year's team could be really special. And that moment did not take place on the field. Mm-hmm. It didn't take place in the weight room. It was around Christmas when you received a report on the team's academic performance in the fall semester. What was the report like, and what did that let you know about this team and how good it might be?
Well, Maggie and I go up to Boston to celebrate the holidays, and right about the time we go, it's kind of just before Christmas, I always receive the grades. And you know, when you're a coach, you got your eyes on that, because it's obviously the performance and eligibility of your kids, which Vanderbilt's never an issue, but at the same time, you want to make sure that your kids are doing well. So when I got that report, opened it up, and it was stellar. It was over 3.0 team grade point average. But more than the grades itself, it just made me kind of reflect on the fall. And I thought to myself, you know, I didn't get one call regarding the kids in terms of behavior, social behaviors.
Not one.
And that's tough to come by. When you got 35 guys, you know, there's a lot of behaviors that do happen. But they were all positive. And I just think at that time, it made me think, this is a mature group. They're making decisions for the right reasons. And the harmony within the group was good. And I felt like everyone, you feel like you always have some talent. But in order for that talent to come out, they have to be doing the right things. And at that point right there, I thought, okay, you know, I don't know if you're going to win a national championship, but I think we're going to be successful.
You know, it's a different group. And in the sense, not just that it's a group that stays out of trouble and a group that gets good grades. In talking to Kumar Rocker earlier in the tournament run, and then talking to you after it, one of the reoccurring themes was the leadership of the senior class. Now, for those who know the class, they know that this group lost one of their own. In Donnie Everett. He passed away tragically in 2016. First off, let me ask about Donnie. What was he like as a person?
Fun, country kid. He was an only child, Teddy and Susan, parents. You know, I think when you talk about baseball talent, not the kid. He was probably seen as the next great one. His last pitch he threw was 101 miles an hour. It was in the SEC tournament. And what they did in memorial to him is they put the 101 on the video board. And they have that up there every year when we play in the tournament. But in terms of a kid, he was very fun-loving. I mean, that's the vision I have of him, was that very last day when we worked out in the morning before he went fishing. He was just screwing around and having a good time. Jolly, he's about 6'2", 220 pounds, country kid, simple, smart at the same time. But if our guys were anywhere and they were having fun, he was in the middle of it. So he was that kid that had a tremendous sense of humor.
So, Tim, what do you make of the way the class responded to the tragedy and then that they brought Donnie's parents onto the stage after winning the title this year?
You know, Jim, in 16, I didn't know if we'd ever get off the ground again, to be honest with you. There were many times I go back and talk to my wife and say, geez, I don't know if I can do this, and I don't know if we can keep moving. And sometimes it was torturous, you know, in terms of the 16 year, 17 year. But the fact that seven seniors came back, some of them were drafted, decided to come back and be part of their last season and have it come full circle was really amazing for a lot of different reasons, because to have a good year is one thing. To have one of those legacy years is another thing. And when we did and we finished it off, the Everetts were a part of it. And, you know, since I guess the positive out of losing someone is we gained their parents. Because a lot of times, Jim, when you have kids, you don't really get to know their parents, nor do you want to know their parents. You want to keep it at a distance.
Right.
But Teddy and Susan became almost like staff members now. So everything that we do with the staff, we invite them too. So obviously we went out to Omaha. They came with us, and it was great to bring them on stage to celebrate that.
Tim Corbin is joining us. Tim, you've mentioned Maggie a couple of times. So let me ask you this. A number of years back, your wife Maggie and you had a conversation about the concept of the last game of the year and the fact that for most teams, the last game of the year is going to be a loss in a tournament. It's going to be tough. There's going to be sadness that comes along with that. Her point was, if you're going to focus on the last game, there's a good chance that it's going to be with a lot of sadness. You shifted the focus. What did you shift it to?
I think got away from the scoreboard more than anything else. I mean, I think just simply that it was that more than anything else. She did say that. It was right about the time her oldest was sick, and I think we were going through an emotional time. And she said, if you're just focusing on winning the last game of the year, she goes, you're going to die a very frustrated man. You got to find other ways to get something out of this, which I have, but I didn't really look at it that way. So I think what she did is, like a lot of people in your life, they give you perspective. And she just gave me perspective on what we were doing as a family and how we were sharing these moments with the kids. And we just kind of turned our attention more to that and did some of the small things better than the big things. And then the big things started to happen.
Tim, you want perspective. I mean, you look at the spot you're in right now, but in the grand scheme of things, it was not that long ago that you were coaching a Presbyterian and sleeping in your car on recruiting visits in order to save money. What do you remember about those days?
They're probably tough at the time, but when you look back at them, you see how they provided some type of foundation for you. I think the thing that, you know, I try to do with the kids too is as they proceed through college athletics and as they garner some attention, just retain your innocence. Don't ever lose your innocence, whether you're a major league player or whatever you do. And I think I try to follow that same path. I remember where I came from. I knew what it was like, much like you and your business. And you start off slow and you wonder if you're ever going to get to the place that you think you could get, nor do you have that vision. So I think I've always been a Presbyterian guy. Even at Vanderbilt, I feel like I'm a Presbyterian coach. I value things, and I want our kids to value things too, because that's very important. So I don't see anything around me as being grander than what it is. I try to keep it very simple.
We're talking to Tim Corbin for a few more moments. Now, when you and I spoke after you won the last title, we talked about the fact that Jerry Stackhouse has already been trying to learn from you. He's not the only one. Head football coach Derek Mason has talked about how much he's learned from you in terms of teaching the details of the game. How do those details, whether it's the cleanliness of the dugout, the fact that the notebooks are in the right spot in the classroom, all the little things, how does that show up in success on the field?
I just think that awareness skills of males are things that have to continually be touched upon. I think it's like a vitamin. And we start every day in a classroom before we go to the field. And I spend about 30 or 45 minutes every day talking about concepts. Could be small concepts, could be character traits, it could be anything. But I think when you start to become very protective of your identity and who you are, you start becoming protective of what you have and the people around you. And when guys start to do that, they become interdependent. When they become interdependent, they become very good teammates. And I think it's for them to focus on their awareness level and what's around them and be respectful of the things that they have and the people that are around them, because eventually that teammate type concept, it starts to flow into what they become, whether it's a husband or a parent. They become very protective of that too. So really, I'm just trying to get bunch of kids to reach maturity, maybe at a quicker rate than they would if no one broached those subjects.
Now, you mentioned in passing some of the guys that come back to the program. Now that you've won a couple of national championships, when your MLB players come back to train, mm-hmm. and they show you the love and respect that they have for you in the program, it's got to be something. Like when David Price says, quote, Coach Corbin is a second father to me, what's it like to hear that? What's that mean to you?
Oh, I try not to overstate my importance with them in terms of how they feel about me that way, because I think the thing that I am is I'm a step parent. And when Maggie and I joined, I joined a family, two little girls. And I think that concept has always stayed with me in terms of being a step parent to two girls. When you learn to love someone else's children, essentially that's what you're doing with other people's children that get an opportunity to play for you. And there's days when you might not like them, but at the same time, the root of why you're there is them, and it's to take care of them. So I've always had that purpose and always had that feeling just to take care of the guys while they're there and try to bring them along both athletically, socially, mentally, in every way, with the help of the coaches, obviously, and my wife. And my wife's a big part of what we do, and she comes to practice every day, comes to every game, and just enjoys the lifestyle that we all share with these kids.
And she's got equity, and she's a big part of this. That's got to be great. Listen, I can't stress this enough, but Vanderbilt made the NCAA tournament field three times in the 20th century. All right, I can't stress that enough. Now you're the gold standard, not just in college baseball, but I could argue in college sports. Did you know this was possible when you were first offered that opportunity at Vanderbilt?
Not really. I think, for some, it seemed like it could be a dead-end job. Vanderbilt's a tremendous university. The coach there before me was a wonderful man. He didn't have the resources that we have today. So I feel very fortunate. But in a lot of ways, too, Jim, I feel like we earned it. Eric Backich at Michigan was our first assistant. Derek Johnson, who's now the pitching coach for the Reds, was our pitching coach at the time. And we just had a great staff, and we just took it upon ourselves to try to do as much as we possibly could in the early years and just start building it. And as we built it, it gained more attention inside the university. They saw it as being a positive program, much like any program that's positive at Vanderbilt. They felt like our baseball program was. So we started gaining more resources. And with that, started gaining a little bit more acclaim. And then kids decided that it was probably a cooler thing to be a part of our program. And then recruiting started to flourish a little bit. And that's where the David Prices and Sonny Grays and Mikey Miners and Alvarezes and so on started to come. And that put us in the situation that we were today. I mentioned that after we won the national championship. It's all connected. If we don't get to 204, we don't get to 207, and so on and so on. So all these kids we've had in the past, I congratulate them, and they go, come on, I didn't do anything. Well, yeah, you did. You built a foundation to get us from point A to point B.
Right?
Right. And that's what it was. So they're all responsible.
He is a two-time National Coach of the Year, a three-time SEC Coach of the Year, and they won the national championship, the College World Series title. Once again, Tim, you are good to your word. You said if you came to Southern California, you would come in studio and spend some time with me, and I really appreciate it. So good to see you.
I do, too. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Jim.
Always good to have you on the show. Even better to do it in person. I'll look forward to doing it again next year. Tim, thanks so much. Tim Corbin, head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. What a blast. All right, we'll come back. Hour number three coming up next. Phone lines are wide open nationwide and in Canada, 1-800-636-8686. Third hour straight ahead.